We want to thank you for tuning in to the good news of JesusChrist.org. We're going to be talking about the grace of God. The grace of God is the most important thing that you need to focus on as a Christian. Why? Because it shows the all-sufficiency and the power of what Christ accomplished at the cross for us. So, one acronym I've heard for the word grace was God's riches at Christ's expense. That was an acronym that I came across years ago. But basically, what grace is God's unmerited and undeserving favor towards mankind through faith. God gives it. It cannot be earned. It is a gift. And grace abounds more than any sin for the born-again person. And grace zeroes out every sin. So basically, the point is grace is inexhaustive for a person who's born again. We'll get into a little bit more details about what that means and different things like that. Let's look at how grace is defined in Scripture. And we'll look at the different ways that it's used and go into some of those insights. But once again, for the first 2 years that I was saved, every Bible study that we did always wound up on grace, and we just really hammered grace. The grace of God is the most important thing that you can understand. Why? Because deception, legalism, manipulation, it's out there, and it's extreme, and it would be real easy for a new convert to, or somebody who's really not even strengthened to the degree of going through the stages of spiritual maturity, to really be sideswiped with legalism. So, just a little word of caution. The word grace is the Greek word that we get charis. And charis can be defined as unmerited favor or divine favor. It's defined as a gift, obviously. And we'll go into what that means in a little bit more detail. It's an endowment, which we'll go into in a little bit more detail. And it's used contextually as giving someone the ability to endure something in a specific context. I don't really like reading the Strong's definition or Vine's or anything like that. You'll find that some of these dictionaries have used modern words to define things, and when you look at the original language, those specific meanings are not there. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about a lot in this video about the ways that it is used scripturally, even though I'm going to be spending a lot of time on the ways it's used scripturally. The most important thing to keep in mind is this: the grace of God. It's the grace of God that saves us when we come to Him. And faith is the channel that we access it through when we're born again. So it's nothing that we could ever accomplish. It's all God. It's His gift. So let's talk about the favor of God. Okay, here's an example. Okay, the scripture says that God resists the proud, but gives favor or grace to the humble. In the context, what that's talking about is a person who resists God's salvation, and then a person who accepts God's salvation. So God resists the proud man. If you deny me before man, I'll deny you before my Father in heaven. If you confess me before man, I'll confess you before my Father in heaven. So if you receive him, you receive his favor, his grace. So contextually, it's a scripture for salvation, and receiving the favor of God is the result of coming to Christ and receiving him by faith. So that's one context, one way it's used. It is defined as a gift in another context. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 and 9, it says, "For by grace we have been saved through faith. It is a gift of God, not of the works, lest any man should boast." So, in that context, the gift, the doxa, there is the Greek word for gift, is the grace that God gives us. So, in that context, it is used as a gift from God that we receive as a result of faith. And it's by nothing we can do, but it's only the result of Christ's finished work at Calvary that we receive it. So, very important to understand. And Paul is speaking to the Lord in Corinthians, and in Corinthians he writes about a messenger of Satan buffeting him three times. He prayed to the Lord that he would take it away, but God said, "My grace is sufficient for you, and my strength is made perfect in your weakness." So, grace there in that context is used to God giving him grace to endure the pain, so to speak, the thing he's trying to walk through. So that's a third way that it's used. Now, a fourth way it's used, and I'm going to spend more time on this one than any other one. That's why I saved it for last. Very, very important to understand. Remember 20 something years ago when I was in Bible college, I was in Greek. I took Greek class, and for a semester, two, I think maybe two semesters for a whole year. And I just remember everything I looked at was from the Interlinear Bible. And I started to notice that when we translate from the original Greek into the English for the New Testament, that the English is a little bit difficult. You have to put words in there to make it grammatically correct. It's a very limited language. But Greek is probably one of the most expressive, picturistic languages that there is on the planet in existence. And and whenever you're looking at the Interlinear Bible has Strong's concordance number. It'll have the Greek word, then it will have the English word, and then it will have some letters underneath for what kind of verb it is, what kind of noun it is, what kind of if it's in the active voice, past tense, present tense, perfect tense, if it's in first person, second person, third person, what mood it's in, is it masculine, feminine, or neuter? There's so many different things that really express the word that is not carried into the English. So we lose a lot in understanding when we just read the English and not go to the original Greek to see the dynamic expression and the picturistic explanation of what it's actually saying with the moods in it and with the it's just really awesome language. And it's not by accident that that's what the New Testament's written into. I'll tell you that much. So in my study, getting back to the point, I noticed that as a result of that, there were certain words that were in the English that we create huge doctrines around, go off on tangents on, but was not in the original language. And traditionally, we've carried that belief system into our thinking and our functioning in Christianity and in daily practice, and it's not correct. And I'm using this particular example last because this is one example that has always kind of really just hasn't sat with me right, and still to this day, because of how it's still expressed out there in modern day Christianity and churches and everything like that. What I noticed is in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 1, now moving on, is the word gifts was not in verse 1. So it says, "Brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant concerning spirituals," in the original language, but in English it says spiritual gifts. But what Paul's actually saying, that word gifts is not in the original Greek for verse 1 in 1 Corinthians 12, 1, is I don't want you to be ignorant concerning the realm of the Spirit. So that's what he's actually stating there. A few verses later, he uses the word grace. So it's charis there. That's used from that point forward, not doxo, which is the word gift. Okay, so charis there is used and is defined as a grace endowment. In verse 4, it talks about how that grace endowments that are expressed in detail through the rest of 1 Corinthians 12, which is what we call gifts. But verse 4 says that they're expressed as a manifestation of the Spirit. So what's actually being stated there is, I don't want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning the realm of the Spirit, for there are functions of the Lord, there are workings of the Father, and there are manifestations of the Spirit. And contextually, for this particular one, it's manifestations of the Spirit, because Ephesians 4 are the functions of the Lord, and Romans 12 are the workings of God. So contextually, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 here, he goes on to talk about the graces that the Spirit manifests, not the gifts, but the graces. And if you look contextually at Paul making the statement, I wish that you would pray for all of the manifestation of the Spirit. Why? Because if they're manifestations, then God can manifest through His Spirit any one of those through us as He wills, as an individual needs at that moment, as that context expresses there too, that the body may be edified of itself in love. By, through whom? Through the Spirit that gives the increase, through the Spirit that does the spiritual regeneration, through the Spirit which gives the growth. So all through Scripture, through abiding in Him who causes the fruit. So the point is it's all God. So we're nourished from the head. That's what the Scripture says. That's what it teaches. John 15, 1 Corinthians 12. You can go all throughout Scripture and just find that. But what's actually being expressed here is that this is a grace endowment, and it's manifested through the Spirit. So the idea becomes, God's not limited. We limit God because as a person who is a member of him, we either yield for him to manifest, or we don't have faith that he can manifest. So there isn't a yielding there. So he's not limited. We limit the manifestation, whether we think he can or whether we think he can't, then he can or he can't. So, because if you look all through the scripture, by faith. So, anyway, these are the four ways that the term charis is used. Just to give you a little bit of insight with using a few scriptures with some context to hopefully show you an understanding of grace. And in closing, once again, I want to emphasize, always, always, always know and filter everything through the fact that it's the cross plus nothing equals salvation, and it's the grace of God, it's the gift of God, it's nothing we ever, ever, ever can perform. It's God's gift, it's His grace. So, I hope that gives you a little insight. And I am Martin Williams with the Good News of Jesus Christ.org.